Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Molly.
And I'm Kristen.
Kristen, when we were researching this podcast today, which is called Should Dads Be in the Delivery Room, I was reminded of a story my mother told me once about the birth of my younger brother, her third child.
Mm-hmm.
And since it was the third child, the doctor asked my dad if he wanted to catch the baby.
Oh.
You know, he'd seen enough by that point. He could handle it. And my mom told me that at that point, my dad was just useless to her because all he did was run around getting ready for his job, talking to the doctors about his job. And it was just like, you know, he kind of forgot she was the one having the baby.
His job of catching the baby.
He didn't want to mess it up, obviously. Uh-huh. That's a bad thing to mess up. But yeah. She said, you know, it's not like he was helping her. During that point, because, you know, he was just like, what do I do? Do I do this? How will it look? Blah, blah, blah. And, so, you know, she said that he was a little useless on that delivery.
But based on the articles we've read about father's experience in the delivery room, your dad was pretty brave for being stationed willingly down there to catch the baby. I mean, up close
and personal
with your mother's vagina.
Well, it's the third child. I guess by that point, maybe I don't know if he'd been stationed at the head or the bottom before. I mean, that seems to be a big deal in these articles you read about where you're stationed during the childbirth.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of that story when I was reading these articles because there's this big question. I guess it's not a big question, but it's a question.
Yeah.
It's been thrown out there about whether dads do more harm than good in a delivery room when they're there with their wives. And whether they should be there at all, because maybe they don't want to be. Maybe we're just all forcing them to be in there, cutting cords, catching babies, when they'd rather just be doing the 1950 dad thing and just hanging out in the waiting room.
Right. I mean, I've thought about this. No, I've never been in a situation that would demand... okay, I've never been pregnant. That's the easiest way to put it. But the thought of, you know, a man you love, seeing all that gore, the beauty of birth and also the gore of birth is a little disconcerting. There's a debate that kicked off fairly recently, by this French obstetrician who claims that fathers and the quote, masculinization of the birth environment are causing an increasing rate in C-sections.
Right. He argues that if the male partner is in the delivery room and he's really anxious because obviously birth can be kind of a traumatic process if you're watching it, he's saying that this anxious man who's pacing back and forth, who wants to fix all this pain, he's actually slowing the woman's production of oxytocin, which aids in the process of labor. And without this hormone, oxytocin, that's, you know, rushing through the woman, making the birth go easily, woman is more likely to have a C-section.
Right. And that theory has yet to be confirmed by any follow-up studies. And the thing is, having dads in the delivery room is a pretty big deal that took a long time. Mm-hmm. In the 30s and up into the 60s, guys did not hang out in the delivery room.
You dropped your wife off at the hospital, mm-hmm. or you sat in what they called a stork club.
Yeah.
Which is basically just a glorified waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
But there were these journals in these waiting rooms, and men would write in them, and their writings were actually one of the big things that allowed men to get into the delivery room.
Mm-hmm. There was a study that we found on the history of the process of moving the men from, like you said, just dropping their wives off, mm-hmm. to actually hanging out at the hospital, to actually being in the delivery room and in these stork clubs where they would have radios and the guys could smoke cigarettes and pace around. It felt very, like where Donald Draper would probably go to wait for January Jones to give birth. And they would fill out their thoughts in a father's book.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them focused on how worried they were about their wives being in pain. A lot of them beseeching Jesus Christ to help their dear wife out and deliver baby safely. And a lot of them also talked about how much they were really, really hoping for a boy.
Yeah. In fact, I was reading some of these things, and one of the funny ones was, thank God it's a girl, so she will never have to go through what I went through, waiting for the wife to give birth. She'd actually be the one in the room. But I was like the only person who was really glad that he had a girl, who saw like this weird bright side of having a girl that, 30 years down the line, she wouldn't have to wait in a stork club. But yeah, it was these really, most of them were very sweet, like, oh, my poor wife is not good with pain. I wish I could be there with her. I wish I could hold her hand. And Robert Bradley, who wrote a book called The Bradley Method that a lot of women use to prepare for labor, also wrote a book called Husband Coached Childbirth. And it was based on his reading and his reading of these journals and also his delivery of babies that convinced him that husbands could play a really important role in the birth.
Right. And he wrote this book in 1962, and it was around this time that the push for men to move into the labor ward really kicked off. And actually, the first prenatal classes for couples started around 1956. So that's when we start to see this movement. And it was interesting that it wasn't linked to any type of feminist movement. Mm-hmm. This wasn't about gender equality at all. It was actually more about this 50s focus on the era of, quote, the husband, wife, and 2.4 children. It was, there's this new idea of this family unit. And with that, you have the dad in the delivery room ready to catch that baby.
Which in some ways kind of cuts down on the sense of community that other women might have felt in earlier times having babies. Babies used to be born in your home with a bunch of women around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't considered a man's place at all to be there for that. And you're right, it's the shift towards the importance of the family unit that really drives the dad into the delivery room. And it kind of seems maybe like a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, there are plenty of dads who describe it as magical, that they were so glad they were there, they could support their wives. But on the other hand, maybe these women aren't getting the support of a midwife that they need or a doula. Or maybe these men just don't want to be there and are ill-equipped for this role where they, aren't in control and can't help their wives the way they might want to. And, we've talked before, Kristen, about how maybe in modern relationships we put too much pressure on this one person to complete you and to be there for you for everything.
Yeah.
And maybe it's too much pressure to expect someone to be by your side in childbirth and then also want to have sex with you later.
My goodness. I'm sure there are a lot of mothers and couples, who would have plenty to say about that. But anecdotally, yeah, that can be the case. For instance, writer, Nick Hornby said that the experience of seeing his first child born left him numbed and shocked. Some psychologists have compared men's experience of seeing their wife give labor as inducing post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Guys almost always report feelings of massive anxiety and fear. Because they're seeing this person that they love in a lot of pain, probably. They might be a little numbed out due to an epidural, but there's always that sense of helplessness.
Right. And, one writer put it this way, that, if your wife needed like knee surgery, it's not like they would expect you to go into the room and hold her hand while she's getting knee surgery.
Right.
But this can also be a major surgery if you're having a C-section, or just sort of a long process if you're giving birth naturally. And maybe there shouldn't be, you know, your partner in there holding your hand when it's a major medical emergency like that.
Yeah, and not to freak people out, but statistically, marriage breakups are most likely to occur in the 18 months following childbirth. And there was one psychologist writing in the New York Times who was saying, I mean, I'm not saying that childbirth, you know, seeing that happen is you know, triggering all these divorces. But in some of his patients, it was something that, you know, the men could never recover from. Mm-hmm. They could never see their wife in the same way after that. And yeah, I don't know. I feel uncomfortable even saying that out loud.
But that's why we have listeners, Kristen. I mean, the solution that all these psychologists and writers and obstetricians are suggesting is that rather than having every father by default in the delivery room, mm-hmm. the couple should have more of a discussion about whether the dad even wants to be there. If he does, are there special like prenatal classes he should be taking that are geared directly toward him as opposed to toward a couple or toward the mother? Ways in which we can make dads feel more comfortable in the delivery room. But I think that's the question for our listeners, since you and I have never given birth. Can you imagine giving birth without your husband there? I mean, would it have been better if he wasn't there? Or would you rather have him in the Stork Club? Or does he need to be there? Is it something that fathers need to see?
Yeah. And, also we have to keep in mind that we don't want to regress back to the 40s when doctors would not allow men in there. There was even a story of a guy chaining himself to his wife's bed so that he could be there for the delivery. And in 1973, there was actually legislation introduced in Congress that would force hospitals and physicians to allow fathers in the delivery room.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, and that would never pass, thank goodness, because we don't need to legislate that kind of stuff, in my opinion. And also, we need to keep in mind the fact that not everyone, actually a lot of people who are giving birth in hospitals these days don't have husbands.
Yeah.
You know, and what kind of role, you know, should boyfriends, or if there is no boyfriend, you know what I mean? Like, now the conversation is so much different than it was back in the days of the husband, wife, and 2.4 kids.
Yeah. But then at the same time, doctors are saying you can't have so many people in there who are going to, you know, impede us from doing our job.
Right.
So that's a fine line, too. And that's why I think we should just open up to our listeners, like, who did you want in there? Who was in there? Who was dead weight in there?
Yeah.
Who was running around trying to catch the baby, like my dad on baby number 3? What are your thoughts on this? Is this French obstetrician just insane? Just anti-male, trying to bash all the dads out of there? Or are there some dads out there who would have liked to have opted out?
Yeah. So send us your thoughts, momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And squeamish dads out there, don't worry. We will protect your anonymity. You can be honest with us. And in the meantime, let's read a listener email or two.
Okay, I have one here from Marin, and it's about the soap opera podcast. She writes, I'm a proud watcher of General Hospital and Days of Our Lives, and I was so happy to see a soap podcast. I grew up with my mother coming home at noon and watching One Life to Live, and I have very fond memories of curling up with her on her lunch hours while she watched her stories. When I was 12, Disney was the entity that launched me into my own soap fascination via their movie Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century. Though I fell out of watching soaps regularly by my senior year of high school and the first few semesters of college, I found a renewed love for the soaps after moving back in with my parents as a too broke to function on my own college student. Thanks to SoapNet and their evening showings of the daily soaps, I've been better able to recapture the lovely mother-daughter time spent bonding over how Bo and Carly made a better couple than Bo and Hope, how revolting EJ Demare is thanks to his use of children as chess pieces, how cruel it was in Nicole to steal Sammy's baby, and I've even found my way back to my favorite soap star, Kirsten Storms, who now plays the delicious, fashionable, and slightly neurotic Maxie Jones on General Hospital. I am incredibly sad to see the end of an astounding era in TV history, and it breaks my heart to know that I will never be able to bond with my daughter over soaps in the way that my mother and I have.
Well, I've got one here from Malcolm, and this is in response to our episode on men and makeup. He writes, I'm a 24-year-old gay man who has, at more than one time in my life, worn makeup, specifically eyeshadow, eyeliner, mascara, and concealer. Outside of one particular incident while working at a coffee shop, I had nothing but positive reactions to my wearing of makeup from men and women, and several women even asked me where I got my makeup. I don't wear makeup anymore, in part because my personal style has changed, and in another part because I'm a college student and don't have time. In contrast to this, my current boyfriend uses an extensive amount of skincare products, so much so that his nightly beauty care regimen takes up to an hour. While few men, gay or straight, will admit to such practices, I can verify that it is incredibly common. The reason this may have not shown up in the statistics you read during the podcast is because, in the case of my boyfriend and a few straight friends of mine, many men buy women's skincare products and or use their girlfriends. Interesting insight, Malcolm. So if you have some insight to share with us as well, our email address is momstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can also hit us up on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast. And in the meantime, you can read our blog during the week. It's Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.